3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Joe Tate, and I have a podcast. It's called Over the Timeline. I look back at the highlights and a few lowlights of my sports broadcast career. Over the Timeline, brought to you by the Life Care Centers of Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
This is Over the Timeline with Joe Tate. I'm Bruce Van Dyke, along with Joe Tate. It's brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake. And we're into the holiday spirit, Joe. So we look back to something that is titled The 12 Days of Ted Stepien Christmas. This was done by WWWE radio stations. Who is the producing person behind this?
A man by the name of Jeff Elliott, who wrote several parody-type songs back in the Stepien days and in other areas as well. He was very talented along the way.
An employee at 3WE?
Yes.
What was his normal duties at that point?
He was, I believe he was the afternoon jock.
Okay.
Yeah, and, I think so.
And so he used some of his creative musical talents to create the 12 days of, you know, there was the 12 days of Cleveland Brown Christmas. I don't know if you remember that one. That was sort of a positive thing. It was about the Cardiac Kids era.
Yes.
And each one was talking about all the different things that take place on a positive note for a team that was, people are excited at wintertime, especially football, because you're playing in December, and if you're playing in December for meaningful games, it means that your team is doing well. This on another one was more of one of those, you know, Christmas songs fall on two sides. There's happy, upbeat, and there's sort of somber, solace ones. This kind of falls on that sort of somber one, but with a tongue in cheek and maybe a little bit of commentary throughout. And this is part of your saved archive. Why did you decide to save this? Do you recall? I mean, you have a lot of archives that kind of started this whole podcast with things. What made you decide, I want to take this one with me, or did it just fall on a reel that you happen to have?
No, I think this one, I remember it vividly. It was kind of our mantra in that 1 year that I worked for Ted with the Cavaliers, and laughing at things like this probably kept me from killing him.
So this literally was in the first year of his time with the—
Yes.
It means all of this—
It didn't take long.
Well, I'm looking at some of the things in different articles you come across that I found. This was, I think, from the New York Times. It says, in the last two seasons, or since Ted Stepien bought the club and became major stockholder of the public corporation, 39 players have worn the uniform of the Cavaliers, 23 last season, for the highest turnover of any team in the league.
Yep. Those were the good old days.
Changing coaches 6 times in the last 3 years. Can you name those coaches? Do you remember any of?
Well, Bill Musselman, Bob Kloppenberg.
He's there. Yes.
Yeah, he worked one game.
What did he do wrong?
I remember the game because I was doing the New Jersey Nets that particular year, and the Cavaliers jumped off to a 28-2 lead against the Nets, and I said to my analyst who was working the game with me for New Jersey, I said, Al, we got him right where we want him. And I was right, because before it was over, the Nets blew the Cavaliers right out of the building.
Uh-huh. Also on that list, Don Delaney. He was in between Bill and Bob. And then Chuck Daly for a very short period of
39 days, yes.
It's fine. It's interesting when you look on Wikipedia. They list the Cavaliers coaches, and there's from Stan Albeck all the way after Bill Fitch. Bill Fitch has comments in this one column. No comments for any of these other coaches except for Chuck Daly, which then lists him as one of the top 10 NBA coaches of all time after taking over Detroit and another job. But after Chuck Daly, Bill Musselman came back. Why was that? Do you remember anything about that?
Well, Bill went to wherever Ted wanted him. He never left Ted's employ. He was GM. He was coach. He was advisor. He was always around.
And then Tom Nasalki. He was after that as well. And at one point, then the Guns got a hold of the team. Right after that, I guess, at that point. Also, I didn't know this, that at one point Ted Stepien wanted to maybe make the Cleveland Cavaliers the Ohio Cavaliers. Are you familiar with this at all, or is this?
Well, I know he wanted to take them to Toronto.
Well, Toronto eventually, possibly, but there was a point in there, and then again, internet's full of interesting things, where it would be kind of instead of, because you're not drawing well from Cleveland, so let's include the other parts of the state of Ohio, and maybe even grab people from Pittsburgh or Buffalo who no longer had NBA franchises.
I did not know that, but it does not surprise me.
I mean, there was a point where the Cavaliers really were struggling, and the NBA sometimes in itself, and they're trying to figure out how to create more fan. I mean, aside from winning, what else can you do, right?
Well, once I left, the Cavs went to New Jersey, then on to Chicago to the Bulls. I really did not pay a lot of attention to the Cavaliers, although when I was driving back from Chicago to Cleveland and would have some off time, at night I would listen to Paul Porter do the play-by-play of West Coast Cavalier games. And I remember the exciting night that I just dialed him in and somebody hit a jump shot, and he said, and I thought it sounded like a game winner, mm-hmm. and he says, "And now the Cavaliers are back by just 54. okay. We know where you are.
Well, right, yeah. The excitement that you build it wherever you can find it,
that's right.
I guess. And you got to, you know, as a play-by-play broadcaster, you have to have your, you know, exciting game-winning calls or ending of quarter calls. You have to add that excitement somewhere. You can't flatline it, you know, that's for sure. So here's the 12 days of Stepien Christmas. You and I may or may not stop it throughout here to maybe fill in on some of the references that take place here. And again, who's the gentleman that...
Jeff Elliott.
Jeff Elliott.
And it's a classic.
On the first day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me a first-round pick in 1983. On the second day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me Musclehead, a coachin', and a first-round pick in 1983.
Now, wait a minute. I thought they lost all their first-round pick. This is why this that Stepien rule got into place, because he kept trading away first-round picks or just high-round picks or any pick that he could.
Trading first-round picks.
Was he like a gambler? It seems like he was trying to take his chips and sort of cash in.
He was an idiot.
May he rest in peace. We'll just say that. But they lost first-round picks, it seemed, even beyond his time there. But then the NBA must have gotten sorry for us and decided.
The NBA sold extra first-round draft picks back to Gordon Gunn when Gordon took over the franchise, because Gordon wasn't going to take the team unless he got those extra first-round draft picks to compensate for all of the first-rounders that Ted Stepien had traded away.
Did we use those other first rounds that we bought back well? Or Brad Daugherty was one of those, if I'm not mistaken.
No.
Or he was a trade for somebody.
No, that was after. That was a Harry Waltman.
Okay. But anyway, the Cavs didn't have many draft picks, and
they were getting fewer by the moment.
Right.
On the third day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me a fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head, a coachin', and a first-round pick in 1983.
All right, the fat guy eating beer cans. This must have been some sort of promotion, I assume.
The fat guy eating beer cans was Boot Buttry from Canton, Ohio. Boot was, among other things, a very good friend of Thurman Munson, the Yankees catcher. But Boot, he could put on quite a show. He could tear the tops off beer cans in his teeth. He could open beer bottles with his eye socket. When the commissioner came out to announce
when would this happen during a game? Would they?
This is before games various other functions that Ted loved to have parties.
Was he like a mascot of sorts or something? Or
yeah, I guess you could call him that.
Okay.
Yeah, right.
So you were saying that
Boot was in attendance when Commissioner Larry O'Brien came out to Cleveland to announce the All-Star Game coming to Cleveland that particular year. And Boot was at the head table, and as Larry O'Brien walked in, I'm telling you this because Larry O'Brien told me, he looked ahead and he saw this fat guy, not necessarily well-shaven, and he tore the top off a beer can with his teeth, and then he swallowed an egg just right out of the shell, and he topped it off with a powdered sugar donut, which he held up and swallowed roundwise. And Commissioner O'Brien said, you know, the one thing I remember, there was a little cloud of powdered sugar hanging over his head when he finished chewing up that donut.
Well, that was the precursor to the whole LeBron powder type of thing, perhaps related to Cavaliers.
Yeah. But, I don't think there was a connection.
Wow. That's even more than I would even picture just from that one reference on here. Here we continue on with the 12 Days of Stepien Christmas.
On the fourth day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me crazy Georgia dribbling, fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head a coaching, and a first round pick in 1983. Now, on the fifth day of...
Hold on, this crazy Georgia dribbling.
Yes, he did half times, and I wish I could remember Georgia's last name. It was a nice guy, and he dribbled a lot. And
Harlem Globetrotters, or I was thinking Sweet Georgia Brown or something like that.
He would put on dribbling exhibitions at halftime.
Multiple balls at one time?
Usually just one. Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe two.
Okay.
Maybe. I don't think he ever got beyond two.
All right. The fifth day of the Christmas.
Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me the teddy bears. Crazy Georgia dribbling, fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head a coaching, and a first round pick in 1983.
Can you comment on the teddy bears? I've yet to find a photograph of them somewhere, and maybe they're a precursor to where the NBA went years later. But
you are right. That is very astute of you there, Greg, because back in those days, they were scandalous. I mean, not well clad. In fact, another thing that Commissioner O'Brien denoted was, he said there were two lines of scantily clad girls who were on each side of the walkway. I had to go up to the head table, and they were all chanting, "Larry, Larry, we love you, Larry."
And now, Joe, did you not ever get like a group photo with the teddy bears at all? This is usually things people would have or something like that. Do you?
I am sure there were some very nice young ladies involved with the teddy bears. I do not want to denigrate them as a group.
Okay.
But
was it Teddy with an I? I've seen a Teddy with a Y, Teddy with an I. I didn't know whether that, you know, and then I always wondered if they wore teddies, if that's perhaps what the...
All of those questions I cannot answer.
Okay. He pleads the fifth on some of that. Here we go.
On the sixth day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me an empty coliseum, the teddy bears. Crazy Georgia dribbling, fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head a coaching, and a first round pick in 1983.
How empty was it, I guess, is the Johnny Carson line that would be related to the Cavaliers and the Coliseum at that time.
I came in with the Chicago Bulls, and my engineer that night counted 36 people sitting in the seats at the Coliseum.
If you could do a hand count of the people, you could, wow. And they were, you know, this is coming off of not too far removed somewhat from the miracle years when they would fill the place up and you'd get in tens of thousands and then you're on less than 5,000 maybe on a night or something. It says, now maybe you're familiar with other leagues or venues, but it says this season, they're talking about a couple years since Ted Stepien has owned the team, attendance is down to about 4,700 a game, and only the Indiana Pacers, who had put a curtain over a large part of the stands, are drawing poorer. So this would be a thing that, I guess, just to make it seem like, well, there's not empty seats there because you can't see them. They're behind the curtain.
Well, keep in mind the 4,700 figure was the figment of someone's imagination because rarely were there ever as many as 4,700 people at any Cavaliers game in that time span.
We'll have more of the 12 Days of Stepien Christmas coming up.
He was a voice heard by Cleveland Cavalier and Cleveland Indians fans for decades.
There's a long drive to left field!
Until illness struck.
I've been at Life Care twice.
Both times, they helped me fight my way back home. It wasn't easy, but I came back.
Meet Joe Tate.
Life Care helped get me back on my feet.
Real people, real heroes. Life Care Centers of America.
With locations in Elyria, Westlake, and Medina.
We have more of the 12 Days of Stepien Christmas as we continue with our Joe Tate Over the Timeline podcast, brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake.
On the seventh day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me an NBA embargo, empty Coliseum, the Teddy Bears. Crazy Georgia dribbling, fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head a coaching, and a first round pick in 1983.
There's no players mentioned in this. It's like everything but players, and I guess maybe there was no players that could be mentioned, leading us to that embargo. What was the embargo they're referencing?
The embargo was the Ted could not make a trade unless he called the league and the league okayed the trade. And so they embargoed his trades. They wouldn't let him make any trades because he was a trading fool. He would just, you know, wake up in the morning and decide to trade Jerome Whitehead, which he did several times, by the way. And they finally just said, enough is enough.
Caesar, where he talked about trading Fitz Walker, also getting rid of Campy Russell. The names that come back are not remembered by most people, right?
Yeah, Footsie and I went to New Jersey at the same time.
Oh.
Yeah, we always said we were a package deal.
On the eighth day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me the media feud, an NBA embargo, empty Coliseum, the Teddy Bears. Crazy Georgia dribbling, fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head a coaching, and a first round pick in 1983. On the ninth day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me a softball on the shoulder, media a feud, an NBA embargo, empty Coliseum, the Teddy Bears. Crazy Georgia dribbling, fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head a coaching, and a first round pick in 1983.
Were you involved? You weren't there when they did the whole Terminal Tower softball.
No, thing. I was not there.
Now, he was, because he owned a softball team as well.
He owned a whole softball stadium, okay. As well as a team.
Okay.
Yes.
I was watching a News Channel 5 report, because they archive some of those things, about the time where they threw the softballs, apparently to honor the 50th anniversary of the building of the Terminal Tower.
Yes.
Which is not a bad thing to honor. And somebody had the idea, and based on what he had said, they had asked the Indians, and the Indian says, no, thank you.
That's right.
I mean, someone said, we could see there's issues that could possibly happen here.
Yes.
Just said no, and he decided he was thinking to step forward. He seemed to always want to be in the spotlight, it seems that.
No kidding.
And apparently he was the one that actually threw the ball over that landed, injuring a young lady at one point, and eventually somebody, one of his team players, caught the thing for
well, that. The ball that hit the lady was on the ricochet because it came down and hit the sidewalk and then ricocheted and nailed her on the shoulder and broke her shoulder.
Ah, okay. So there's a little bit of that trivia from the 12 Days of Stepien Christmas.
On the 10th day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me a polka for a fight song, softball on the shoulder, media feud, an NBA embargo, empty Coliseum, the Teddy Bears. Crazy Georgia dribbling, fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head a coaching, and a first round pick in 1983.
By the way, is it fair to call him Musclehead? I don't know whether how much it was his fault or what he was given at that time.
Everybody called him Musclehead. Okay. Yeah, and he earned the title, believe me.
He worked hard to get that, I suppose. Where were we on this one? What was the last? Oh, the polka for a fight song. Do you remember much of that? I cannot, again, during you credit me for having me able to do some research. That one has escaped me at any point that I've been able to find.
I don't think anybody ever kept a copy of the polka fight song, but there was indeed a polka fight song, and they would play it at Cavs games.
Rump, 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 ba-da-dum-dum-dum, ba-da-dum-dum, ba-da-dum-dum, the Cavs. I can't, I'm trying to figure out where you'd throw any lyrics or...
Yeah. Ted felt that polka was big in Cleveland and Frankie Yankovic and all that going on.
I think his heritage is probably Polish, so he's kind of adding some of that. I'm trying to mix the teddy bears, the dance team, and polka music. It's kind of a dichotomy there.
The girls could polka.
Oh, I'm sure they could.
I think that's what they were doing.
12 days. We've got a couple more days to go here.
On the 11th day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me the Cavaliers in the basement polka for a fight song, softball on the shoulder, media feud, and NBA embargo, empty coliseum, the teddy bears. Crazy Georgia dribbling, fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head a coaching, and a first round pick in 1983.
So, Cavaliers in the basement.
That pretty well sums it up.
They had gone from winning 37 games 3 seasons ago. This is a couple years before Ted got them, to 28 2 seasons ago, to 15 last season. How bad did it get? Of course, you were gone out of there as well.
I wasn't there.
Eventually, they turned things around once Ted was gone, but we have one more day of that.
On the 12th day of Christmas, Ted Stepien gave to me the world's biggest headache, calves in the basement, polka for a fight song, softball on the shoulder, media feud, and NBA embargo, empty coliseum, the teddy bears. Crazy Georgia dribbling, fat guy eating beer cans, muscle head a coaching, and a first round pick in 1983.
You can sing along. We can cry along with that. Do you remember? What did they leave out?
Very cleverly, the first round draft choice in 1983 was, the song was written in 1979 and 80. So they were talking about first-round draft choices 3 years down the road.
So it was even more painful than I thought at that particular time, which just sort of shows there seemed to be no hope for that. But as you'd spoken with Andy Bulbarch, the Gunn brothers coming in really solidified and somewhat saved this franchise.
Gordon Gunn saved the franchise. Harry Waltman was his right-hand man and certainly brought World Be Free in, who for a couple of years was all the Cavaliers had in the way of talent that, you know, interested fans to come out and watch him play. And they got the extra first-round draft choices from the league to compensate for all of the draft choices that had been traded away. And, you know, they got over the hump and back into business. But those who have not gone through the Ted Stepien era can not really understand how bleak it was and how bad it was. It was I could sit here and tell you stories about dealing with Ted personally that he still owes me a suit of clothes because he bet me a suit of clothes on the number of wins the Cavaliers would have. And then he said they'd win 30 games. And I said, Ted, you'll be lucky to win 25. And he said, I'll bet you a suit of clothes that we win 30. I said, you got it. And with 4 games to go, the Cavaliers had won 25 games or thereabouts. He came over and stood in front of me during a ball game so that I could not see what was going on the floor. And he dropped this note on my scorebook, and it said, 25 wins with 4 games to go. How about it, Joe? Time to eat crow. And I looked up at him. I said, 25 wins, 4 games to go, so the most you can hope for is 29. I win. And he turned around and walked away.
That is great. It said also here that he used to sit pretty close to the bench. Is that true or somewhere down there?
Right around the corner from the bench. He could not sit on the bench or he would have done it. That was against the rules. But he would sit right around the corner on those end seats.
Making decisions or trying to influence or something?
I'm sure. I paid very little attention to what he was doing.
You kept that as a blind spot out of your vision, just to watch between the two baskets. Well, that's a lot of fun. Joe, we appreciate your time this morning. Merry Christmas to you. Thank you for sharing a bit with us on the 12 days of Stepien Christmas. This has been our Over the Timeline with Joe Tate, brought to you by Life Care Center of Elyria, Medina, and Westlake.